case for the day, U.S. versus De Leon. Mr. Brindley, whenever you're ready. Were you appointed, Mr. Brindley?
Yes, Your Honor. May it please the court, counsel. My name is Bo Brindley, and I represent the defendant appellant, Mr. John De Leon. The first issue I'd like to discuss with the court is the issue of obstruction of justice. Before I get to that, I just want to make sure the procedural history is clear. Mr. De Leon initially pled guilty, then obtained new counsel, successfully withdrew his plea, went to trial with a defense of entrapment, was acquitted on two counts with a hung jury on the third, and then chose to plead guilty to that third count instead of having another trial. With respect to obstruction of justice, the district court found three statements to constitute obstruction. The first was a statement made at Mr. De Leon's plea colloquy where he said that he was voluntarily pleading guilty and then withdrew his motion to withdraw his plea. The court found that he was actually, that wasn't true, that he was not acting voluntarily at that time. I think the most important aspect of that first statement is this. Everyone now, the district court and even the government in response, seems to be in agreement that Mr. De Leon was acting involuntarily due to his circumstances when he did his first plea colloquy and entered that plea of guilty. And if he was acting involuntarily when he was making those statements, as the court found that he was, then it seems as a matter of necessity that he couldn't have been making a statement willfully with the intention to obstruct justice. One can't be both involuntary and willful at the same time. So that, I think, constitutes a clear error with respect to that first statement and whether it can actually constitute an obstruction of justice enhancement or support one, because there has to be a specific and willful intent, and this was a statement found to be legally involuntary. The second statement, it was a statement made during the course of...
Are you saying it was not an obstruction? You're emphasizing the concept of obstruction? Is that what you're saying?
He was given an obstruction of justice enhancement at...
Yeah, I understand that. But your argument that you just made is that his statement was not obstructive, if there is such a word.
Yes. That's essentially what I'm saying, because this court's cases, particularly the Ewing case and the Galbraith case, have said that a defendant has to intend to impact the outcome of the proceeding, willfully intend, and if he's acting involuntarily, he can't. With respect to the second statement,
I'm not sure. I can see where the effect of his statement is not to obstruct the proceedings. At least that argument could be made. That would strike me, but I'm not sure I understand what you mean by saying if it was involuntary, if his plea was involuntary, that necessarily vitiates anything.
Well, the bottom line, Your Honor, is that he wasn't intending to obstruct justice or impede the prosecution of his case when he entered that plea and made those statements. That's true, and that doesn't have the proper intent to support obstruction of justice anyway. But my point is that one can't both speak involuntarily and willfully at the same time as a matter of necessity, which I think is logically true. Now, with the second statement, it was one which was made in the written motion to withdraw the plea prepared by counsel, prepared by me, in which he made a couple of statements, and I made a couple of statements in the motion, which Mr. De Leon indicated were correct. One of them was that Mr. Clark, his former counsel, told him to plead guilty. And the district court said they found that to be a statement on which the obstruction of justice enhancement was based. The problem with that, I think, is the record makes clear that Mr. Clark did tell him to plead guilty. If we read the record and what the district court found at the plea withdrawal hearing, Mr. Clark testified that he did indeed meet with the defendant, he did tell him he did not believe they could win the case, and did advise him to plead guilty. The statement referenced by the court when it was finding obstruction of justice enhancement at sentencing was the statement Mr. Clark told Mr. De Leon to plead guilty. There's essentially no difference between those two things. It's indisputed that Mr. Clark advised him to plead guilty. The court found that. Not only did they find that Mr. Clark told him these things, but the court found that Mr. DeLeon, as a result of that, felt that he was painted into a corner and had no choice. And so the statement Mr. Clark told him to plead guilty appears from the record to be absolutely true. And whatever difference there is between that statement and what the truth was is so insignificant that, one, Mr. DeLeon probably couldn't have identified it, and two, he certainly couldn't have intended that difference to impact the outcome of the proceeding.
Let's get on to the heavy caseload statement.
The heavy caseload statement is, I think, that one is the most interesting, certainly, and the one where there's the greatest question. But there, Mr. DeLeon had no intention to affect the outcome of the proceeding, and it's indicated by when he got on the stand and testified, he admitted that was a mistake, that wasn't correct. If he wanted it to affect the outcome of the proceeding...
But it sort of makes the other two more believable, doesn't it, to have said that?
Well, it makes the other two...
The other two reasons, that he was told to plead guilty and that that the plea was involuntary.
Makes the other two seem more believable?
If his lawyer tells him that his caseload is too heavy to prepare for trial.
It might. It might make... But the bottom line is, Mr. DeLeon had the chance to say yes... That's true at the hearing, and he didn't persist. He denied it. He denied it and made sure that it wouldn't impact the outcome of the proceeding.
Because his lawyer, his former lawyer, was there, right?
His former lawyer was not. I don't think he was in the room when Mr. DeLeon gave his testimony.
But they'd gotten a statement from the lawyer.
He testified the same day.
So he knew that his lawyer was going to deny that
one.
Or had denied it.
Mr. DeLeon testified first. I don't think he knew what Mr. Clark would say about that.
But he knew Mr. Clark was there.
He knew Mr. Clark would testify, yes. But he took it back before it could affect the outcome.
Let me ask you about this entrapment matter that you raised. In the trial, did you ask to have the entrapment instruction only apply to the drug charge?
No, the entrapment instruction did apply to all three. The question with respect to the counterfeiting was a question of predisposition that amounted to the question of, can someone be predisposed to commit a crime at one time, then make some changes in their life, and stop being predisposed? And we asked the jury to decide that, and they couldn't. Following that decision from the jury, or non-decision, Mr. DeLeon made the determination. He'd gotten the jury's input on that question and decided he was willing to plead guilty.
Now, you didn't assert that you just submitted the entrapment to the drug charges only, that he only wanted to pursue the entrapment as to drug charges?
At the motion to withdraw the plea, he stated that he only wanted to change his plea to the two drug charges and that he wanted to claim entrapment with respect to those. Following that, the strategic decision was made for purpose of trial that we would present the entrapment with respect to all three and get the jury's input, which we did. The one thing I would like to stress with respect to the statement about the heavy caseload, and I think I've said it already, is that he actively took it back. And I think that, as a matter of policy, is what we want people to do. Mr. DeLeon, if he wanted to lie to affect the outcome, he could have gone to the hearing and said, Mr. Clark told me he had a heavy caseload. When Mr. Collins asked him, he could have said yes. Nothing would have stopped him. He and Mr. Clark had disputed several issues about exactly what happened. But he chose not to do that. And that's the choice I think we want people to make. We're looking for honest testimony, which is what he gave, and he made sure it wouldn't impact the outcome of the proceeding. The government stressed that it impacted the judge's decision to have a hearing, an evidentiary hearing. And that may go to an argument about materiality, but with the question of intent, the intent to affect the outcome of the proceeding at issue, Mr. DeLeon's intent was made absolutely clear when he chose to say, no, I am absolutely not going to maintain that that's true.
You're in your rebuttal time. Do you want
yes,
to
sir,
say
I understand that, Your Honor. And I, with respect to acceptance of responsibility, only other thing I'd like to say is the difference between Mr. DeLeon's case and so many others cited by the government is that he claimed entrapment and the jury and the court found that he was credible and honest. And I think that makes all the difference. I see the remainder of my time. Thank you, Your Honor.
May it please the Court, Michael Schmeller on behalf of the United States. Any of the three false statements in this case made by the defendant would be sufficient to support the obstruction enhancement that he received.
Let me ask you this. Okay. The defendant has already admitted to everything, even though the jury didn't convict him of the counterfeiting charge. What more, from a practical standpoint, would a defendant have to do to warrant a reduction?
Your Honor, you asked for the acceptance of responsibility. Yeah. Well, as discussed in the Rector case, mere admission of the factual allegations is not sufficient to warrant acceptance of responsibility, because by the defendant arguing entrapment, what in essence he's really arguing is that I did it, but it was somebody else's fault. So as counsel referenced in his brief and throughout the proceedings, the assertion of certain facts was essential to argue entrapment, but it certainly wasn't sufficient. And the court was looking for something more than the mere acknowledgement of factual allegations. And there was nothing more to warrant going beyond the rare and generally accepted position that acceptance would not be given after somebody argues entrapment at trial.
So your position is that the defendant who pleads guilty to entrapment should never get a reduction for acceptance of responsibility?
Well, I don't think the circuit has a per se rule that if entrapment is argued that they're automatically precluded.
I'm asking if you want us to adopt that rule.
I'm not asking to adopt the rule. I'm saying that in this case, the defendant argued entrapment. He did nothing more than admit facts he needed to argue entrapment, and he did nothing more which indicated that he'd had any remorse or had accepted responsibilities for his actions.
But if we rule in your favor, it would be tantamount to saying that if you plead guilty to entrapment, you can never get a reduction for acceptance.
I don't believe that would be the case of creating a per se rule in the circuit. I believe that, as confined to this case, there was nothing more. And I think the court, and as discussed in Rector, the court was looking for something more, and it was absent from the record. So it rightfully denied giving the defendant the acceptance of responsibility.
Judge Cohen, did you have a question?
No, I was going to ask you another question.
As to the obstruction.
Not on acceptance of responsibility.
As to the obstruction enhancement, all three would be sufficient in this case and were sufficient in this case, but most notably was the statement by the defendant in his motion withdraw his guilty plea that his counsel was not prepared due to a heavy caseload.
Well, how about this business about his saying that the plea was voluntary? As it relates to, is that showing intent to obstruct the proceedings? It sort of facilitates the proceedings, doesn't it?
Well, I think that it was clear from...
It may not be true, but I mean, it's going along with the flow, I think.
Well, I think it was clear from defendant's comments during the hearing on the motion withdraw his guilty plea and in his written motion withdraw his guilty plea that he intended to avoid the trial date that was scheduled for the next day. And I think during the discussions during the motion and questioning during the motion withdraw his guilty plea, he indicated that he was willing to say what he needed to avoid trial and to get through the plea. And it was a strategic decision to avoid trial the following day. So I think the plea, the fact that the defendant lied during the initial plea and claimed that the plea was voluntary, in conjunction with the other two false statements that he made, were all sufficient to support.
Yeah, but if you provide a plea in lieu of a trial, I'm not sure that obstructs the proceedings, does it?
Well, in this case, the as the district court pointed out, he did rely on the defendant's claim that his plea was voluntary. It clearly was not voluntary. It was a strategic decision made by the defendant to avoid the trial date, which was scheduled for the next day. And the defendant knew that if he entered his plea, that he would avoid trial and go from there. So the defendant did what he had to avoid the trial date. And I think, though, with the that statement, that is the lie that his plea was voluntary, in conjunction with what were clearly false statements in his motion to withdraw his guilty plea, all indicate that the district court did not commit clear error in this case, enhancing his sentence for obstruction. And as indicated, most notably was the statement that the defendant, former attorney, came and told him that he was unprepared due to a heavy caseload. It was clearly incorrect, and contrary to what the defense counsel indicated, Judge, the former attorney testified first. Mr. De Leon was in the courtroom at the time of the former attorney's testimony, and he did not recant that statement, contrary to defendant's claim. Defendant did not take back that statement until he was asked about that statement three times on cross-examination. So what happened in this case was that the defendant filed a motion to withdraw his guilty plea. He later filed an amended motion where he verified the facts. He then testified on direct examination and at no point withdrew any of the statements that were false in his motion to withdraw his guilty plea.
That former lawyer was an appointed lawyer as well. Is that true?
I'm not sure if that was an appointed attorney, Your Honor. And it wasn't until the cross-examination that defendant finally took back the statement after being questioned three times. If there are no other questions, I'd ask that the defendant's sentence be affirmed.
All right.
Thank
Mr.
you.
Brindley, 2 minutes.
Was Mr. Clark an appointed
counsel?
Was.
Mr. Clark was appointed, and then after Mr. De Leon's family dealt with the ramifications of the guilty plea, they retained me to represent him. I was a retained attorney who replaced Mr. Clark.
And
that's correct.
And now appointed for the appeal.
Yes, correct. With respect to Mr. De Leon not taking it back until cross-examination, that was the first time he was asked. The first opportunity he was asked, he took it back. Counsel says he was asked three times. If you look at the three questions, he never tried to dodge it at all. He tried to indicate why he believed he was unprepared, but never indicated that he said it. And when asked directly, he took it back at the first opportunity. With respect to avoiding the trial date, Mr. De Leon wasn't trying to avoid trial. He was, and I think the district court found, he was trying to avoid going to trial with a lawyer he believed was unprepared. And that's completely different. And the admission of involuntariness by counsel here.
Wait a minute. I thought you said he took back this thing about not being prepared.
He believed that he was unprepared. He took back the statement, the claim that he told him he was unprepared. Yes. And counsel again admits the involuntariness issue, which goes to the point I've already made. With respect to acceptance of responsibility, Your Honors, there's nothing else this man could have done to accept responsibility. He admitted every element of the crime. Not only did he admit every element of the crime, he admitted relevant conduct. Not only did he do that, but then at once the jury was deadlocked and he had the opportunity to try again, he made the choice. Even when it didn't serve as any benefit to him at that point, he made the choice and said, I'm going to plead guilty to this because in light of what the jury said, I think I'm probably guilty. There is nothing any other defendant could do. This is one of the few defendants who pleads entrapment and is believed to be truthful by a jury and a judge. And when that happens, in that circumstance,
they didn't acquit him of that charge. They hung.
Right. But the inducement element of the two drug charges, the inducement conduct, was the same as the conduct with respect to the counterfeiting. And so they found him to be truthful on the inducement. They deadlocked, and the district court essentially admitted this in his findings at sentencing, on the issue of predisposition and whether he was predisposed. And so both the jury and the district court found his claims about inducement with respect to the entrapment to be truthful. And that is a rare occurrence. And when that happens, in conjunction with the defendant who admits everything, and then when given the chance to, after a deadlock, to contest it again, says, I'm going to plead guilty because I'm going to accept responsibility because I did this.
I believe I was predisposed after hearing everything as it came out. He couldn't have done any more. And so saying that Mr. DeLeon doesn't deserve an acceptance of responsibility reduction is tantamount to saying that no defendant who pleads entrapment ever should. And I don't believe that that would be an appropriate ruling from this court.
Thank you, Mr. Brennan. We thank you for your vigorous representation of your client, and we thank you as well, counsel. The case will be taken under advisement.